Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast. How are you today? You're doing okay? Yes, good. Why did I shout that to you? I don't know. Don't know why I kind of demanded to know how you're doing today. But anyway, I hope that you're doing fine, as always. Here's another episode with more English listening practice for you to get stuck into. And I have another guest on the show today. This time, it's Anna Tyree from English Like a Native, the channel on YouTube. Do you know English Like a Native, the channel on YouTube? Do you know Anna Tyree? You might know her if you've ever been on YouTube. You know what YouTube is? Have you heard of the internet? If you've been on YouTube and you've searched for learning English content, you've probably found Anna Tyree, English Like a Native. You've probably seen some of her stuff. You might also know her from Instagram and TikTok. Well, Anna has recently set up a podcast too, which you can find wherever you get your podcasts. It's called the English Like a Native podcast. In fact, on the same day we recorded this conversation for this episode of this show, the one that you're listening to right now, on the same day we did this, Anna also interviewed me for her podcast, and we had a good long conversation about all sorts of things. It was very nice to be interviewed by her. You should be able to find that episode on her show now. I mean, not right now, obviously, because you're listening to this. Don't just like just drop this one and just go straight over. Don't abandon me that quickly, okay? What I mean by you should be able to find that episode on her show now. I just mean it's available now. I don't mean just like drop my show like a stone and just jump over. But, you know, if you enjoy this conversation that you're going to hear today, then go ahead and listen to the one on Anna's podcast too. And, you know, go ahead and subscribe to her podcast as well. You will find a link in the description. Okay. Right. So coming up in this conversation, you will hear me getting to know Anna a bit, you know, just the usual where are you from type stuff, because this was the first time I'd actually met and spoken to Anna. So there's a bit of the usual getting to know you type stuff. And I talk to her about her podcast and her YouTube channel and what the name really means, English Like a Native, what that really means. And then the main subject of this episode is talking about children. And we decided that we could talk about a particular topic for this episode rather than just rambling our way through the entire thing, although that could have been good too. But no, we decided to focus on a specific topic this time. And that topic ended up being children. I've had requests from listeners in the past for more on the subject of children and the English language. I imagine because many of you out there who are parents who are going to be parents and all the rest of it, you're interested or curious in the way that we use English with kids, because you might be considering speaking English with your children, which is a good idea to give them a little head start. Even if your English is not 100% completely perfect or anything, it's still a good idea to use English with your kids. Because, you know, anything is better than nothing, basically, when it comes to language learning. Give them a little head start. Give them a chance to communicate with someone that they are close to in another language. It will help. Certainly better than not doing it at all, right? Anyway, children is the topic, okay? Including the way we talk to children, the way we talk about children, and the specific words for lots of things related to children. So we talk about our own kids and specifically about how we communicate with them. Typical things we say to them, in English, of course. How we should be careful about things we say to our kids sometimes. the ways adults adapt their English when talking to little children, including examples of so-called baby talk or parentese. And then there's a sort of quiz at the end with questions about specific English words for lots of the different objects, toys, and bits of useful equipment that we use with babies and little kids. Do you know all the vocabulary of kids stuff and baby stuff? Well, there's a quiz with quite a lot of it in it. Hmm? There's a quiz with quite a lot of it in it at the end. That's the worst sentence I've ever come up with. But there's a quiz containing a lot of that useful vocab at the end of this episode. That's better. That's better. Okay. Now, as you know, I have a daughter and she is 5, okay, 5 years old. So a lot of that baby stuff almost seems like a distant memory now. But, well, it's high time I remembered all of that vocabulary again now, because, drum roll, and you're thinking, what, what's going on? Drum roll, what's the drum roll? Let me back up again. Let me back up and go back to the beginning of that sentence, because some of you didn't get it, right? Why is Luke doing a drum roll? Okay, let me start that sentence again, see if you can notice what's going on here. As you know, I have a daughter and she is 5. So a lot of that baby stuff almost seems like a distant memory now. But it's high time I remembered all that vocabulary again now, because drum roll. A drum roll is what you do to create a sense of suspense before a big revelation, that something new information is going to be revealed. Drum roll. Ta-da. Yes, you guessed it. My wife is pregnant again and we're going to have another baby. That's why I did the drum roll. Ta-da. My wife's pregnant. We're going to have another baby. Yes. Now I need to leave a little pause now. There's a little pause. Just to let you react. Thank you. Yes, thank you very much. Thank you for your... Thank you for saying congratulations, which is obviously what you just did, isn't it? And yes, we are delighted. We're absolutely delighted. I am delighted. I'm going to be a dad again. And yes, thank you. Because obviously at this moment, you are now saying, or you're thinking about saying, or you've just said, maybe not out loud, but possibly in your head. And if you didn't, then, you know, you can take this as a little English lesson for the things that you're supposed to say when you find out that someone is pregnant. Thank you for saying, even in your head, wow, Luke, that's fantastic. Congratulations. I'm so happy for you. All right? Because you did just think that, didn't you? Wow, Luke, that's fantastic. Congratulations. I'm so happy for you. And then all of the typical questions will probably come to mind, right? What are the questions that we always ask? Or that we sort of socially are obliged to ask out of the general rules of social etiquette. What are those questions that we always ask when we find out that someone is pregnant? After we've said, oh, well, fantastic, congrats. Not well done. It could be well done. I mean, it depends. But normally it would be like, congratulations. I'm very happy for you. And then the questions. Well, you might say, can I ask when the baby is due? Can I ask when the baby is due? Now, that's a slightly more polite form of question than just saying, when's the baby due? Which you could ask, that's fine. Oh, fantastic, when's it due? Or if you want to be a bit more tentative and a bit more polite, can I ask when the baby is due? And due, by the way, that's spelled D-U-E. When's the baby due? Or can I ask when the baby is due? What's the due date? There's another one. What's the due date? When's it due? Can I ask when it's due? Notice the inversion. Did you notice? When is it due? That's the normal question format. But can I ask, if you add can I ask, then we do an inversion. Can I ask when the baby is due? When is it due? Can I ask when it is due? You see? That's an inversion. Oh, fascinating stuff. Grammar. Anyway, that means when is the birth date expected to be? When's the baby due to arrive? When's the baby due? And do you know if it's a boy or a girl? Do you know if it's a boy or a girl yet? Would you like to know? And are you ready? Are you ready? Are you prepared? Do you have any names? Do you have any ideas for names? And then stuff like, oh, and how's, you know, you might ask me, how's your wife doing? Is she okay? And how about your little daughter? How does she feel about it? Is she excited? Is she excited to be a big sister? And so on. So you may be asking those questions. Now, I'm sure I'll talk about this again because this is, I'm still in the introduction to an episode with Anna. And so I shouldn't really be going on about this too much. And I'm sure I will talk about this again in another podcast fairly soon. Maybe I'll do a rambling episode where I can just freely waffle like this and answer all those questions. But anyway, I thought I would let you know now. Of course, the child hasn't even been born yet, so there's a long way to go. I say there's a long way to go to just to let you know, my wife is, it's basically the middle of the pregnancy right now. She's in the middle of the second trimester. Obviously, we have the first trimester, the second trimester, and the third trimester. So she's in the middle of the second trimester. It's pretty much in the middle of the pregnancy at this moment, and everything seems to be going fine so far. Fingers crossed, touch wood, right? All normal as far as we can tell. But yeah, the child hasn't even been born yet, so there is a long way to go. But all being well, in July, at the beginning of July, there will be a new Thompson arriving in the world. Is the world ready for another Thompson? Yeah, a new member of Team Thompson will be arriving. Now, I don't know how this will affect the podcast, of course. Some of you might be kind of going, I don't know what some of you might be going, oh, God, no. He's going to talk about babies all the time now. Oh. Or some of you are going to go, oh, no, a baby. He's just going to, that's the end of the podcast then, isn't it? I think someone commented that last time. No, not the end of the podcast, but it will probably affect the podcast in some way, right? Because when a baby is born, it's, you know, it requires a lot of attention, a lot of time, and a lot of things have to be put on hold and stuff. So, of course, it's probably going to disrupt things podcast-wise to some extent, as I will be busy at home with my wife, looking after the baby, helping my wife with anything she needs, taking care of our daughter, trying to keep things shipshape and under control, and generally just being at home, focusing on the family. So I probably won't be able to do much podcasting around the time of the birth, maybe in the weeks before the due date and obviously the weeks after the due date. Who knows? Maybe I'll disappear completely for July and August. Or maybe I'll find a way to keep podcasting. We don't really know. It sort of depends, doesn't it? Maybe if I'm organised and I'm industrious enough, by the time the baby arrives, I will have recorded lots of episodes beforehand, maybe, which I will be able to publish over the summer. Or maybe I'll dig into my archives for some unpublished or lesser known material, which a lot of people haven't heard, you know, and I can just like republish that stuff, the sort of stuff that's only been heard by a few thousand people. I can kind of unearth that stuff and publish it again in the meantime. And I'm talking about things like app-only episodes, episodes that were only available in the Luke's English Podcast app, which is now defunct, by the way. The LEP app is defunct. It's out of order. It's not work. Well, you can still listen to stuff on it, but don't bother downloading it now. It'll probably go offline completely in the summer. But, you know, I'm going to salvage some of the app-only content and I'm going to upload it, probably. I mean, I haven't heard it for a long time. There's a stupid made-up story and some other things in there, which maybe I can publish that. Anyway, where was I? Anyway, in any case, there might be some kind of disruption to the show. Thank you for your understanding and for your patience and for your lovely messages of congratulations and support, which you are welcome to write to me and which some of you are already in the process of doing. Right, of course. Yeah, so thank you for that. Obviously, I've just said thank you for a thing you haven't even done yet, which is kind of against the rules of politeness, isn't it? But anyway, there it is. We're very happy. We're hoping everything goes well. I'll probably talk about it a bit more in another episode later on. So there you go. Now, let's get back down to earth here. Right, back down to earth, back feet on solid ground here, because this is a conversation with Anna from English Like a Native, getting to know Anna a bit and then talking about the English which we use with kids, about kids and for, all the bits and pieces involved in looking after kids. Okay, by the way, this conversation was recorded in January, which is why I say to Anna, it's January at the start. Okay, just in case you were wondering. Now, I probably didn't need to say this bit, did I? You probably have the deductive skills to work out that when I say to Anna, it's January, it's because we recorded that bit in January. But just in case you were worried that I don't know what month it is, don't worry, I do know what month it is and what year it is and generally where I am and what's going on. Okay, I will speak to you again a little bit at the end of this recording. But now, let's get started with the interview with Anna Tyree from English Like a Native. And here we go right now. Hello, Anna. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Why did I say it three times? I don't know, but I did. How
Hello.
Are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you very much.
Good,
how are you?
Good.
How are you? I should ask you back. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. You know, it's January, so, you know.
Yeah.
Still
do you,
recovering.
Sorry, do you suffer with January blues?
Yeah, I suppose so. It's more physical, you know. You just kind of, there's always a cold lingering in the background somewhere, always trying to recover from a cold that you got, or you don't know if it's the end of one cold or the beginning of another one.
Yeah, you just know? Constant sniffles.
Yeah, sort of like that. Yeah, so I can't wait for the sun to actually come back.
Yeah.
Whereabouts are you, by the way, Anna?
Well, I'm in Leafy, Surrey, but technically I'm within the M25. So you could say that I'm in London, Greater London. Although if anyone says, hey, I'm in London, come and meet me because this is where you live. I'm like, well, no, it's actually a good like 40 minutes to an hour for me to get into central London. But yeah, I'm Greater London on the outskirts of Surrey.
Okay.
So very cold.
Cold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Probably slightly colder than it is for me, being just a few degrees south of where you are.
Yeah, in old Paris.
In Paris, yeah, where it's grey and everyone's on strike today, by the way.
Oh, fun.
Surprise, surprise. I mean, you know, that's not a rare occurrence, but everyone's on strike. So all the loads and loads of train, metro lines are all closed.
Right.
So it's impossible to go out. I was supposed to be teaching this morning at the British Council. That got cancelled. Everything just got cancelled. My daughter couldn't go to school. So it's just one of those.
No.
These things happen sometimes here. You'll just have a day where just everything, no, it's like, no, everyone just goes bad. No. C'est pas possible aujourd'hui, and no one does anything. So it's kind of one of those days.
Well, they're good for catching up with things, I think, when you have those kind of enforced rest days. I think they're quite good for getting on top of old projects and things that need sorting out.
Yeah, like a little mini one-day lockdown kind of situation.
Yeah.
all right, so another question for you. Where are you from originally? Just out of interest.
So originally, I'm from the north of England, a long way north from here. I was born in a place called Southport, where they have a really big beach and no sea.
What? No? How can you have a beach with no sea?
Well, there is sea, but you have to walk a very long way to see the sea. It's kind of like there must be a name for it, where there's like an inlet and it's still coastal, but it's when the tide goes out, it goes a long way out. And you can see Liverpool across the water. So that's the kind of area that we're talking about, Liverpool and Blackpool just along the coast. And I was born there, but spent most of my youth in Manchester. So, yeah, I've always been kind of drawn to the cities. I went from Manchester to Birmingham to study at university and then ended up in London studying my master's in London. And just kind of stay down here. It's a little bit warmer and a little less wet.
Yeah, okay. maybe some slight traces of that sort of northwestern accent
yeah.
as well that you have.
Yeah, slightly. Where are you from in the UK?
So I'm from both West London and the West Midlands, if it's possible to be from two places at the same time.
Right, okay.
Like Schrodinger's cat. That's a weird... Why did I say that? I don't know. Schrodinger's cat is the thing where it's like there's a cat in a box and physics students will know. It's like somehow the cat both exists and doesn't exist inside this place at the same time.
Right.
So it's possible. It's like quantum physics that something can be in one place and yet not be in that place simultaneously.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm simultaneously from West London and the West Midlands. But it's not like Schrodinger's cat because it's actually quite simple. So we lived in London for the first 10 years of my life and then moved to the West Midlands for the next 10 years of my life. So
very nice.
There you go.
Very nice. Yeah. I used to have a flat in... I always have to do the never eat shredded wheat in West London. You know that? I never eat shredded wheat.
Never eat shredded wheat. Northeast, southwest. Northeast, southwest. Never eat shredded wheat. Mm-hmm. Shredded wheat being a breakfast cereal. Yeah, it's what we used to do as kids to try and remember our northeast, south and west.
So I used to have a flat in West London that was, the front door was Brentford. And the garden, the back garden was South Ealing, which is obviously a little bit more posh. And so depending on who I was talking to, when they'd say, where are you living? I'd be like, oh, I'm in South Ealing. But really it was Brentford. Yeah.
We're just like, where do you live? Oh, just moved. Let me just move to the back of the house. I mean, I live in Ealing.
Yeah.
I am from Ealing as well. Yeah, that's where we used to live. Nice. West Ealing. I don't know if that's even more posh.
Probably.
Or less.
Well, I mean, it's west, isn't it? Moving out towards the Midlands, so.
Generally, west in cities tends to be nicer.
Yeah. And east is usually more hip, isn't it?
And the more sort of industrial, slightly cheaper place, but often a bit more hip. Mm-hmm. And it's true in loads of cities, that.
Yeah.
Which is kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah, I need to do some research on that now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there's any truth to it. But there's one theory that prevailing winds would blow the smoke towards the east.
Right.
And that would mean that was the more polluted area of the city. And so accommodation was cheap. I don't know if that's true. And so accommodation is cheaper. But I mean, the wind doesn't always blow in that direction, does it?
No, I guess it depends where you live as well as to whether you get more wind or less wind. Would you set up a wind farm in that area? Probably not.
Or just make sure it's facing in that direction. You know, it doesn't matter where you put the wind farm. Just make sure it's facing the right way. Anyway, this is a very strange and typically rambling beginning to this conversation, but I really need to try and get this conversation under control. So Anna, right. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk today, actually. We do have a plan. The plan is to talk about children, raising children, the way we talk to children, the way we talk about children, the vocabulary relating to childcare and all that kind of thing. But before that, let's continue having a little bit of a chat because we have never met before. This is the first time we've spoken to each other. And I just thought I'd ask you about your YouTube channel and your podcast, which is probably what people know you for. And I expect you have Instagram and TikTok and things too.
Yeah, onboarded all of them, as you do.
Yeah.
I'll never touch TikTok. It's just for kids. And then you're on TikTok dancing away.
Pulls you in, doesn't it?
It does. So YouTube is kind of like my main focus, but I've wanted to do a podcast for a very long time. But my partner kind of said, no, you can't do this. You mustn't do this. You mustn't do it. Because if you say yes to one thing, you're saying no to something else. You only have so much capacity. And, you know, you've got so many other plates spinning that adding a podcast is just going to be, it's just going to be too much. It'll be the straw that breaks the camel's back. And so I held off for a long time. I actually recorded like 5 episodes and never did anything with them. In fact, I should probably use them. And I intended to do it a long time ago, but then kids came along and, you know, life gets even more chaotic. So I didn't do it until I was invited on to a podcast with Lindsay from All Ears English. And we had a lovely time. I was like, I really enjoyed this. I really want to do it. And so I said to my partner, I don't care what you think. I'm just going to do it. I'm only like 14 episodes in. So really quite fresh to the podcasting scene.
Is the podcast that you do, is it different to the stuff you do on YouTube?
It is in a sense of it's longer form. It's much longer. On YouTube, the average video tends to be around 8 to 12 minutes. So it's a shorter, more concise lesson. And it's definitely moved into a kind of, it's either listicle, where you're revealing a list of vocabulary or interesting phrases, or it's like technical, grammatical kind of teaching. Whereas the podcast, on what I wanted it to be, what I hope it will be, is focusing more on British lifestyle, culture, and just a little bit more talk, ramble, chatty style, because I'm a bit of a perfectionist. It buckles me. It makes life very difficult because I want everything to be perfect. And so I don't get anything done. It paralyzes me. And so the podcast is something where I can think, I have something I'd like to talk about. There are a few points, and then I can just in a very relaxed way, just talk. And often that will bring up, you know, some interesting things, hopefully. And then if anyone wants to listen to that, then they can. So that's the idea with the podcast. It's supposed to be just more relaxed and talking a bit more about the culture and British life and me and my experiences and things like that.
Yeah, that's the great thing about podcasting is that you can do that. You can sort of relax a bit more and just talk a bit more. Whereas YouTube, it's all about maintaining their attention for the shortest period possible, because people on YouTube are constantly like, I've got to look at something else immediately. You know, yeah. That's just the nature of the platform, isn't it? That it's constantly, it's saying, look at this. No, look at this.
Yeah.
You know, and whereas with podcasts, you know, you choose your episode, you put it on, put the phone in your pocket, you've got the headphones on, and the phone's like, yeah, fine, just leave me alone for a bit. It's okay. And off you go.
Yeah.
So yeah, great. Great. Good idea. Good idea to go into podcasting. Yes. Okay. So your channel on YouTube, which I am sure that everyone knows about, because it's appears to be a big success. The channel is called English Like a Native. So can you just talk about the title?
Yes.
Talk about the title. Now we start laughing there because, why? What's up with the title? It's great. It's a great title.
Yeah.
But have you ever had any
backlash?
Sort of backlash regarding the title?
Yeah. So I think students of English will be none the wiser. They'll just think, well, that's it's a good name. English Like a Native is, you know, people learning English probably want to sound like a native when they speak. So that's a good name. It's a good keyword. It's what I'd search for. But then teachers in the industry, and something that I didn't take into consideration, sometimes would kind of furrow their brow and be like, I'm not sure about that. It's some people would say that to say doing something like a native is discriminating. If you're a teacher of English and you're not a native teacher, it might make them feel like they're not good enough and that you have to be a native to teach the language, which of course is not true. So why did I use that as my title? Well, it was perfectly innocent. I came into teaching English online and my initial ideas for titles just weren't available. It's very hard to get a good title, a brand name that's not already taken. And so when brainstorming, I was thinking, well, what kind of lessons am I going to be delivering and aiming for? Now, I didn't come from an academic teaching background. I came from a performance background. I am qualified as a teacher, but as a singing teacher and as an accent coach. And so that was kind of like my thing. I was teaching elocution, pronunciation. I was teaching singing. I've got a lot of knowledge about voice, but not really about like grammar and everything. And so I was like, well, natives don't really know grammar or grammar rules, as it were. So I want to teach English in the way that natives learn English. So in a more relaxed kind of acquiring of language rather than having to study rules and being very precise. And the other thing was that native speakers, we make mistakes all the time. And in some cases, it becomes like an accepted part of a dialect that certain grammatical errors, like, for example, what are you doing right now, Anna? As a northerner, I could say, I'm sat here chatting to Luke from Luke's English podcast, and I'll be sat here for a long time talking to him, rather than saying, I am sitting. And that's perfectly normal for someone who's northern to say, and it's accepted. So if it's, you know, you've got this argument between what's grammatically correct and what's actually language in use. What are people actually saying? There's lots of words that are mispronounced, lots of words that are misused, and that's how the natives use the language. And so that's the way I teach. I try to teach and try to be like, you know, you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to know the rules. Just use the kind of language that will help you get by and help you communicate what you need to say. So that was the idea. And also to cover my back a little bit as well, because when I first started, I knew very little about English other than I could speak it. And so I was like, well, if I made this mistake, that people point out your mistakes, which is fine. And it's good because it helps me to learn to say, well, I'm just a native and this is how natives speak. So thanks for telling me that. We're all learning together. But yeah, just trying to say, I'm just a native teaching rather than a technical teacher teaching. And I'm going to teach you in the way that natives learn and in a more relaxed way. So if you're looking for academic English, I'm not the person to follow. That was the idea behind it anyway. Very innocent.
Sorry for putting you on the spot there, but
it's okay. It's okay.
It's like, you know, just these days, that's just a big issue, isn't it? In English teaching, the whole question of, you know, native speakers and all that, on all the rest of it. But yeah, of course, like in our first teaching experiences, we always come across students who are always like, I want a native speaker, which is, you know, that's a whole other story for another time. But basically, your approach, let's say it's also about how native speakers learn a language, and let's try and encourage our adult learners to learn English in a similar process. And that actually is my way of neatly segueing into the subject of our podcast today, right? So you're not suggesting that people learn English to the level of a native speaker, although there's nothing wrong with having that as a goal, or that native speakers are the only ones who can help people learn English effectively. Mm-hmm. What you're saying is learning a language in the same way that native speakers learn their own language. For example, how children learn languages. So you see what I did? See, I moved it into talking about children. I've been doing this for 14 years.
Did you ever listen to Radio 1 with the, was it Radio 1 where they had the tenuous link? Was it?
I don't know. I don't know. Who was that? Do you remember?
It was Moyles, Chris Moyles. Chris Moyles was the presenter. And they always had a section where they would talk about like a fascinating fact during a show, and it would always be something, you know, like the desertification of Spain or something, you know, weird and wonderful. And then the next day they'd have a completely different topic, but they'd say, so yesterday we talked about this topic, and then they do a tenuous link, which was always a segment. The tenuous link was a segment where they would spend 60 seconds, and it would have to fill that time, moving from one topic into the completely unrelated topic by saying, desertification of Spain is all about deserts, and deserts are made of sand, and sand actually comes from can be made into glass, and they just change and change and change until eventually they got close to the topic of the day. I always thought that was really good fun.
Nice phrase as well, a tenuous link. That's where you manage to link two completely unrelated things in a very sort of, in not a very clear way. There's a very sort of weak connection between the two things, but you make that connection anyway. Yeah, when my first teaching job in Japan, there you go, bonus points, listeners. I said it again. I used to live in Japan. Everyone gets bonus points whenever I say that. My first teaching job in Japan, we had a sort of punishing teaching schedule, and I would teach sort of 50-minute lessons back to back, like kind of nine of them back to back throughout the day with about 10 minutes between. And you'd go in with your lesson, which you had to do, you know, the lesson which had, you know, you just chose in the last 2 minutes that you had, and then you'd go in and naturally you'd start talking to them like, hi, how are you today? And then you, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, but I've got to start that lesson though, because I can't just keep talking for 50 minutes. It'll dry up in 15 minutes, and then what am I going to do? But if I start the lesson too late, then you know, we won't finish it, and that'll be awkward. So it's like, right, I need to 5 minutes of conversation just to start normally, and then need to find a way to get into the subject of this lesson that I've got in my hands. And there's always like a tenuous, the number of tenuous links I had to come up with. And, we, you know, in the teacher's room, we'd have like a tenuous link competition to see who could come up with the most ridiculous tenuous links from whatever the student had just talked about to, oh, that actually, you know, that brings us into the topic of the lesson. Didn't even need to do it. Could you be like, okay, that's interesting. Anyway, let's talk about, you know, shopping. But in this case, children. Right, so.
Oh, yes.
Remember? We had a plan for this. Right, so talking about children then. Okay, so first of all, how many kids do you have? You have kids, right?
Mm-hmm. I have two young boys, a two-year-old and a four-year-old.
Okay, right. Wow, bit of a handful, mm-hmm. potentially.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Definitely. Although we feel like, my partner and I, we feel like we're just hitting that stage where everything's suddenly becoming a little bit easier. Like we don't have to take the pram out with us most of the time. And when we go out, we don't have huge bags and loads of stuff. We just have one tiny bag that my eldest son doesn't mind carrying. So, you know, just drinks and a few nappies for my two-year-old and we're sorted. Oh, and snacks. Because they're always hungry.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's relatively easy now. It's just the sleep. Sleep is still a bit of a nightmare. But yeah, they're really good fun.
Yeah, the goalposts keep shifting as they develop. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, obviously at the beginning when they're babies, that's a whole specific sort of challenge of like making sure that, you know, when they cry, what is it? Is it that, you know, they need a nappy change? Are they hungry? Do they miss their, you know, mummy? Do they need their little cuddly toy? And then as they learn to walk, then suddenly there's a whole other series of challenges where it's like, okay, remove every sharp corner in this place. And you've kind of, yeah, the tendency is that you end up following them around.
Yeah, helicopter parenting. You become a helicopter mum or dad.
Yeah, where you're constantly hovering over them. Yeah, which we have to try and avoid.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I've got one child. I've got a daughter. She's five. We're going to talk about babies and toddlers and just young children. And so there'll be sort of references to all those different stages, those generally different stages, including a lot of stuff about babies and things, which actually is, it's been about 4 years, I guess, that we in my flat haven't been dealing with the baby stuff, but it's coming back because bombshell. Yeah. My wife is pregnant.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, I haven't said that. I think it's the first time I've said it on the podcast, unless I release an episode before this in which I mention that as well. But yeah, so
well,
yeah, we're
going to
have another one in July.
Very exciting.
Yeah. So all this is going to be relevant again.
Yeah.
okay, so you've got two boys, two years old, 4 years old. I've got a five-year-old daughter. Let's talk about talking to children, the way we talk to our kids.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the most common things you say to your boys?
Be careful. Be careful. Although that is one of the phrases that I'm really trying hard not to say. Because I think if you say it too often, it just becomes just a noise to them. They don't pay any attention. So I'm trying to be a little bit more specific with my be careful instruction. So for example, we just bought them bunk beds, which they're very young for bunk beds. But I trust my eldest, my four-year-old, to be on the top bunk. The problem is my two-year-old, who is very confident, likes to go up and down the steps, and they're quite big steps. And he thought it was fun to start jumping off the step. So he jumps off the bottom step and then he goes up to the second step and goes, big jump, big jump. So I have to remind him that's not appropriate and he might get hurt. But when he's coming down those steps, rather than saying, be careful, I'll say, look at your feet, hold on tight. So I'm just trying to be very clear about how to be careful rather than just saying be careful.
I'm saying that, I say that all the time. It's kind of one of a family joke that my mum has said that obviously thousands of times, and she always used to say that to us as kids, but she used to say careful,
oh, right.
which is Careful is two syllables, but she squeezed it into one syllable. Careful.
Right.
You know, and so I actually find myself saying that too. I'm saying and doing all the things that my parents and my grandparents would do. So my grandmother, I said this on the podcast recently, I think, my grandmother was famous in our family for going, jip, 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 jip. If you were going to pick something up or touch something you weren't supposed to, she would go jip, 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 and make these ridiculous noises. I do exactly the same thing. It just comes out. And careful and, you know, don't go mad. That's another thing that my mum always used to say. So, yeah, be careful. But, yeah, we have to try to be careful about the way we talk to them as well, because you can kind of sort of subconsciously suggest certain things with our comments, can't we?
Mm-hmm.
We don't want them to become overly nervous, right? So, so for example, if it's like if they're doing something that's a bit dangerous, we want to say, you know, watch out, you're going to fall. But if you say that, that suggests to them that every time they do something like that, that they will fall. Whereas, you know, we have to try and sort of reword these things, don't we?
Yeah,
it's difficult for me.
We don't want to break them. Mm. We don't want to mess them up before they hit adolescence and go through all that crazy stuff. I know what you mean. It's like if you say stuff like, "Oh, he's shy. Are you shy? Are you shy?" Then you're almost you're giving them words. You're labeling them, and they'll say, "Oh, I'm shy. I'm quite shy." Rather than saying, "I don't know. How would you say instead? You're not ready to talk to me today. You don't know who I am. That's okay. Well, when you're ready to talk to me, I'm here." One thing that we were very careful with was how we discipline the children, and specifically trying not to label them. So when they're going through their emotional and mental development, they have tantrums. And rather than labeling them as being naughty, "Oh, you're being very naughty today. You're such a naughty boy. Why did you do that?" I'll say to Jacob, not that he has difficult times very often, but if he is having a hard time, I'll say that. "So you're struggling today, aren't you? You're having a hard time today." Or I'll just get down on his level and say, "What's wrong?" If he's refusing to do something and he's just being difficult, I'll say, what's the matter? You tell me. And often that would result in him just giving me a hug or saying, I don't want to put my clothes on because I want to eat my breakfast first. Or, "I really want to put my robe on. You've got your robe on. I want my robe on." "Oh, well, of course you can wear your robe. Okay, if you don't want to get dressed now, you want to put your robe on and be in your pajamas, that's fine." And I found that's been really, really useful to kind of move away from those just, "Oh, you're just being naughty" labels, to just asking them what's wrong or saying, "You're feeling very frustrated now and that's okay. But hitting your brother, that's not okay. So when you feel frustrated, you can come and talk to me, you can have a cry, you can do whatever you need to do, but you can't hit anybody." And so just trying to treat them like they're like you would an adult, but in a understanding way that they've got no experience, rather than just saying, "You're a naughty child and I'm not going to help you deal with this stuff. I'm just going to label you and give you some time out. We used to do time in. We do time in with them. So time out is something that is a discipline technique where you... I'm explaining to your listeners now, Luke.
This is good. No, I'm loving this. This is great.
Time out is when you when your child has been naughty or behaved in a way that you don't like, you tell them they have to have time out, and you put them somewhere, usually in another room or out of sight, for them to sit and just be quiet until they think about what they've done and come back and apologize. Or
sometimes known as the naughty step, but you've chosen not to call it the naughty step.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have time out.
Yeah, so it could be time out. It could be time out on the couch or in the corner of the room or in the hallway. Or like you said, you could have a naughty step, which is usually the bottom stair or something like that. We don't do time out. We do time in. So we have some time in where we'll take them away from the situation and put them down somewhere, but stay in eyesight. So they can see us, say, "Look, you're very upset right now. Your behavior is not acceptable. So I'm going to stay here. And when you're ready to talk to me, or if you want a hug, I'm here." And it's surprising how well that works. My eldest, my 4-year-old, so many times when we've done that, will be like no, I don't want a hug. Go away. I hate you, or whatever. And then a few moments later, and I'll just sit there quietly and say, well, I'm here when you want me. I'm here when you're ready to apologize. You can come and talk to me, or if you're ready for a hug. And always within a few minutes, he'll be like, oh, I'm ready for a hug now. And he just changes. And I think he is now an extremely confident child. He talks to everyone. My childminder says all the time, she's so proud of how he behaves when she takes him out. He talks to everyone. Everyone loves him. Very confident, very polite. And I honestly think it's because we are just so, I don't know, generous with our attention for him. We, you know, sit and talk him through situations, talk him through how he's feeling, rather than just excluding him and telling him he's naughty. Because he's a very sensitive child. He has a lot of emotions. And I think it's important that you give him you explain that emotions are okay rather than labeling them. Sorry, this is a tangent again, isn't it?
No, this is great. You give them the tools that they need to be able to describe their feelings. Mm-hmm. Because, but this does require a lot of patience and sort of wisdom from the parents to be able to do this, because it can be very hard. Mm. Obviously, as parents, we lose our temper and we lose patience, especially when we're trying to get things done or when the child is apparently just not listening. And what can happen is you end up just going, you know, just stop. You just basically want them to stop what it is they're doing, and you just kind of want to turn them off, as it were. You know, just stop, just go sit there and wait there because I'm cooking, you know. And but then you're just an angry rage man in front of them, and they don't understand that, and they probably they're misbehaving or something because they can't communicate how they're feeling because they don't know how to do it yet because they're only small. So if you say, oh, you know, are you struggling? What is it that's what's the matter? What did you just talk to me? Or go and sit there until you're ready to talk to me. You know, those sorts of things. Yeah, maybe you're equipping them with a sort of language that they can then use to express themselves. And I mean, neither of us are child psychologists. No. Of course. We're sort of armchair child psychologists, but we do speak from experience of having kids and you know, doing these sorts of things. But yeah, it sounds great. It sounds like you've got a sort of really good approach to doing that.
It works for us. I mean, we have a lot of children that come around to our house that aren't ours, that our childminder will have multiple children at once. And so I get to experience seeing lots of different children, how they behave and interact. And every child is different. And, you know, I've taught lots of young children as well, although I think it's different when they're in a home environment. But what works for one child won't work for another. And it's the same even between my two children. What worked well for Jacob doesn't really work well for Caspian. So, you know, you've got to find a strategy that works well for you and for your kids. And what you said about as adults, sometimes we lose it. We're trying to equip our children to cope with their emotions, but we can lose it as well. What I try to do is when I do lose it, because it does happen, we're just humans, is then once I've calmed down, is I'll say to the kids, I'll be like, you saw mommy got really angry there. I'm sorry. I should control myself better, but sometimes I just feel tired and I feel a bit overwhelmed, and it wasn't a great way for me to deal with that. So I'm sorry. And so, you know, I try and show them that I have the emotions too, and it's okay. And this is how I'm now dealing with the fallout. Like, I'm not just ignoring it and saying I can do it and you can't. I'm saying I did it and it was wrong. But there's no right way or wrong way to do it.
Yeah, of course. No right way. Well, you know, there are certain wrong ways. But what's coming into my mind right now is thinking about my audience all around the world and thinking, I bet that there's people with totally different approaches, and that culture is a huge issue here. And I wonder if, you know, people in different parts of the world have totally different ways of thinking about this and so on. But, you know, people can leave their comments in the comments section, can't they? If they have, you know, things that they would like to say in response to what we're saying.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
How has the way that you speak to your children changed as they've grown up? Obviously, your oldest is four, but that's, you know, there are stages in that 4 years of development. Yeah. How, you know, I mean, even in a simple way, have you changed the way you communicate with them?
Yeah, definitely. So when they were tiny, tiny babies and they give you nothing, they're just, you know, barely even looking at you, then you know, your whole tone, you've got that parentese kind of way of talking, haven't you, which is all about the intonation, the pitch. You tend to go a bit higher pitch. It's like, oh, hello, hi. And you really modulate. You have these big sweeping tone changes and everything's much higher pitched. And you really draw out you emphasize everything, don't you? You really draw out your vowel sounds. It's all very simple. And it tends to be kind of just, I would always tell them what they're doing. I kind of narrate what they're doing. Oh, are you looking at me? Oh, you just threw up. Oh, dear. You know, oh, you were sick on mummy. Lovely. Thank you, darling.
Oh, you've pooed your pants again.
You had a poo-poo.
You want me to clean it up, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, just narrating. And so you do that obviously when they're young and they're not really giving you anything back. But then as when they start talking, I guess I would repeat them a lot and try to clarify what they're saying. And I'm just moving out of that stage with Caspian, my two-year-old. His speaking is really becoming dynamic now. It's really interesting. Literally, he will go to bed and the next morning he can like extend his sentences by a couple of words. And it's just fascinating to see that language development. But before this, I would say that most of the time, whenever he spoke, I would repeat exactly what he just said to clarify what he said. And also, I guess we do it naturally to help them improve their pronunciation and make their sentences more complex. So he might say to me, mummy, mummy, deuce, deuce, meaning I want some juice. So I'd say, oh, you want juice? You want juice? And he'd say, yeah, deuce. I say, oh, yeah, mummy, juice, please. And so then I'd add something on. So I'd say exactly the way he'd said it, mummy, juice, and then add please, because I want them to be polite. And then I don't know where the switch came, but I think about the way I talked to Jacob, my four-year-old, and I pretty much talked to him in the way I would talk to any adult. It's very natural. And I don't know where that, I think maybe because he's now communicating with me fully. But I guess the only adjustment I do make is that I, ding dong, I've turned my Alexa down, but you might still, someone's at the door. Alexa.
Someone's at the door. Alexa tells you that someone's at the door.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You live in a futuristic house.
my studio's in the garden. So if anyone's at the door delivering parcels, it tells me someone's at your door.
Do you need to go and get that?
No, to get the door? No.
Okay.
So what we say? Oh, yes. So the only change I make for Jacob when I speak to him is that I will use less advanced words. I wouldn't use words that I know he's got no idea what they mean. It wouldn't help. So I guess I slightly simplify my language, but otherwise normal tone, normal pace, just chat to him. And sometimes he doesn't understand, but he'll ask me, say, mummy, what does that mean? It's great fun.
It's also interesting to watch the way that kids will work it out from context. Mm-hmm. So we can say things to our kids and knowing that they won't understand what you're talking about. For example, I went to, and then just name a place, you know, so you're telling them a story. So I was on the way to, I don't know what's a good place. I was on the way to Ealing Broadway and I missed the bus. And that they're not going to know what Ealing Broadway is, but they kind of don't need to know. They just need to know, you know, lots of little things like that. They slowly work stuff out from context. But also, yeah, so for me, my daughter, as I said, is five now. And what's really fun is playing with language with her. And that's really good. Like, she came home from school the other day singing a song, which was, "I like to eat, eat, eat yogurt and banana." I think she heard it at school.
Yeah, I know this one, yeah.
And the fun thing about it is that you change the vowel sounds in the word. So it's, "I like to eat, eat, eat yogurt and banana." And then you say, "I like to oot, oot, oot yogurt and banunu." And then a different sound every time. And she absolutely loves that.
Yeah.
Messing around with language, which is really interesting, the way that through play, kids learn how language works, and they kind of learn what the... They can, yeah, I mean, play is obviously how they develop, you know, they're just messing around. And yeah, by doing that, they learn the limitations and the what you can do. And when language stops being functional and starts being ridiculous and funny, and how you make things funny, that's a really good, fun thing to do at the moment. And really sort of enjoy reading her certain books, especially ones by Michael Rosen. Do you know Michael Rosen?
Yeah, he's the language guy, right?
He does a show on Radio 4 about words, but he also has written lots and lots of poetry and stories for kids. So he did that book, "We're All Going on a Bear Hunt."
Yes, that's a great.
That's
one.
Him. And lots of others as well, like loads and loads of them, and lots of very funny poems. He's actually apparently really well known in China because he's a meme in China.
Really?
Yeah, he videoed himself reading some of his poetry, and one of them is like a funny story about having dinner with his family. And the story goes basically, so we sat down for dinner and I got a big fork of potato and I blew on it and I popped it in my mouth. Nice. And the moment when he goes, "Nice," right, like that, and he does this face, that little gif, whatever you want, that has become a meme in lots of places around the world, of just him kind of eating something and going, "Nice."
Brilliant.
Like that. And so anyway, him. But his poems are so great because they're really full of nonsense. Like, some of them are really ridiculous. And it's really good fun to just... realize that, oh yeah, you can just push all the boundaries and say all sorts of stupid things.
Yeah.
And they love it. And you don't have to be restricted by the rules of reality at all.
No. Well, it's like Roald Dahl, you know, Roald Dahl writes such expressive material for children. And I think that David Walliams is quite similar in style as well. But yeah, Jacob loves playing with words, and he has a real talent for making up words as well. It's making up names of things. But it starts to become a little bit of an argument in our house, because he'll be like, he'll pick something up and say, lipstick. "Mummy, I found this." I'm like, "All right, okay, yeah, that's my lipstick." He goes, "No, this is a kunkumpa." I'm like, "Oh, it's a kunkumpa, is it? Yeah, it's a kunkumpa." And at first we'd go along with it. And then you say, "No, darling, it's a lipstick." "No, it's not. It's a kunkumpa." Like, all right. Oh, okay. If you say so.
Yeah, there's that whole thing of like everything becomes a negotiation. We're like, but really it's not a kunkumpa. It's a lipstick. And like, yeah. "No, it's not. It's a kunkumpa."
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, well, and then you end up in a sort of a negotiation over the name of this thing. It's like, why are we negotiating this?
Yeah.
Go out into the world. Go on. Go and ask for a cucumber in a shop and they'll give you a cucumber, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He likes telling jokes. Sorry,
yeah.
He loves telling jokes. But the only he's got a couple of jokes, and the one that he loves to tell but doesn't pronounce the word Europe properly is "knock knock."
Who's there?
Europe.
Europe poo.
No, Europe poo. Obviously, kids that age love poo jokes. But he does that to people. But he says, "You're up. You're up," and they go,
right.
"You're rap who?" So they don't quite get it. But yeah, he loves playing on things like that, and anything to do with poo, it just makes him giggle. Mm-hmm. There's a story called Hippobotamus, a storybook. You should try and get it if you can.
Okay.
And that's absolutely brilliant. It's a really great. I love stories where it really goes with a rhythm. And it's definitely one of those. It's all about a hippo who's eaten all the beans this week, and he makes the bubbles in the bubbling creek. And yeah, it's like, it plays on sounds and rhythm a lot. It's really fun.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and it's about farting. So yes. The kids are like working out. Like, oh wait a minute, the kids. There's probably a moment where the kids are like, oh, this is about farting, isn't it? Oh, I love this.
Yeah. Yeah, that becomes the rhythm of this huge jungle musical that everyone gets involved with, and it's all the bottom of the hippo.
Yeah. okay.
So, okay.
No, I'm just trying to move on to the next. I'm looking at my Google document here.
So how can you tenuous link a farting hippo to the next piece?
No, I'm not going to even bother with a tenuous link. That's fine. I'm happy to just like, yeah, and a farting hippo. Okay, so I was looking at, so in my Google document, I've got a list of some of the things that come up, little things about baby talk. So you talked about, parent ease and baby talk, and that's just like, ooh, who's a cutie pie? Who's a, you know, that sort of high intonation pattern and lots of repetition and stuff. But so I'm just thinking about some of my listeners who might be out there thinking about raising their own kids to be bilingual and to speak English, right? And they might decide to start speaking English at home with the children, but then they might not actually have some of the standard sort of parent ease that we have in English. Let's say it's someone who speaks Spanish as a first language. In Spanish, they will do certain things with words to make them babyish or to make them for kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like often adding certain endings to words, like eater at the end.
Right.
It's like a sort of diminutive form of a word in Spanish. But how do we do this in English? So can you think of some examples? I've got a list of examples here. I start reading from them, that might sort of
the basic one, which is mummy and daddy. Obviously, when you're older, mummy and daddy is very babyish, because it'd be mum and dad is kind of your just general way of talking about your mother and father. But for young children and babies, it's mummy, daddy, or even further back than that, mama and dada. Oh, where's dada? Where's dada? Is that dada? Dada's home. Oh, mama. You know.
Yeah.
So Jake, mama, dada, Jacob plays mummy, with daddy. Saying mum now, and I'm like, don't you dare. I am mummy. I am mummy until you're 16.
unless, of course, the kids are really posh, in which case they will call you mummy for the rest of their lives.
Yes, that's weird,
mummy,
isn't it?
Mummy, I lost the keys to my Range Rover.
It's funny, isn't it? Why do they do that?
They're just weird, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't.
Posh, super posh people.
Yeah, maybe they have the luxury of staying childlike for longer.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, the privilege of being able to continue to... I don't know what it is. Anyway, I don't want to open a can of worms about the class and posh people and normal... whatever. So, cutie pie. So adding pie on the end of things.
Yeah, sweetie pie, cutie pie.
Sweetie... Hello, sweetie pie. Hello, cutie pie.
And that's always cheeky. For names, isn't it? Like terms of endearment.
Yeah. So yeah. I call my daughter Cutie Pie and Sweetie Pie. I don't know why pie. She's not a pie.
I think it's about making them edible, like sweet edible. Like you're so cute I could eat you. Which is a bit weird. Yeah. But
it is a bit weird. The parents do want to there is a recognizable acknowledged phenomenon.
That we just that want parents, to eat our kids.
We want to eat our children. Oh, you're so cute I could eat you.
Yeah. Yeah, I do kiss my children a lot. They just smell so good. I'm like,
what else? Cheeky monkey is common sort of thing that I call my daughter a cheeky monkey.
Yeah.
What about going to the toilet? What do we use to? How do we describe the different things that kids do? I'm talking about the two main ones.
Oh, number ones and number twos. We say wee wees and poo poos.
Wee wee and poo poo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She made a poo poo. You done a poo poo. You go, mummy, poo poo. You done a poo poo. You want a poo poo? What's going on?
Yeah, that's right. Dog becomes doggy. Cat is a kitty. What do you call pajamas?
I tend to say PJs.
PJs.
And I guess you're thinking gym jams or jammies.
Gym jams, yeah. PJs, gym jams. How do we say it's bedtime?
Time for beddy bows.
Beddy bows, beddy buys.
Beddy buys.
Yeah, that's right. You, to an adult, you would say good night, good night. Mm-hmm, but what do we say to... What do we say to children?
Night night or nighty night.
Yeah, nighty night.
Oh,
yeah.
It's very cute. My little one, he still has a dummy at bedtime. So he puts his dummy and I'll say goodnight to Jacob. Night night, Jacob. Very sweet.
So cute. Sleepy time as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kids like to have a blanket.
Mine don't.
No, but they kick the blanket off.
Yeah, they're very much. And also my eldest, both of them were breastfed children for quite a long time. And my eldest, once we kind of moved away from breastfeeding, still liked to twiddle the nipples. Yes, very uncomfortable. And it went on. I put up with it for a little while. And then I thought, it's just not going to happen for much longer.
No, so I was like, stop to this.
How can I wean him off me? And so I thought, well, I used to give him a second dummy sometimes because that's kind of nipple-like, isn't it? The teat of a dummy. It's a little bit like a nipple. That's the point. Yeah. That's why they have them in their mouth. And he would twiddle or twizzle. Which word do you use? I say twiddle, but twizzle is probably better.
Twiddle or twizzle. Yeah, either of those things. Kind of like play with it between his fingers.
Yeah. So he would twiddle the second dummy, but then he would lose it. And when you've got two to try and find in the dark, what a nightmare. So then I saw that you can get these like teddy bears or little like teddy monkeys or teddy elephants that are actually then attached to a dummy-like thing. So it has its own little nipple thing, and it's specifically for finding it in the night because all you have to do is find the teddy and it's got this dummy thing on the end. And Jacob had a monkey, and so it's like you've got your dummy, you've got your monkey, and he'd twizzle that and he'd go to sleep. Caspian is exactly the same with his desire to be with me, but he refuses to have anything else. So I tried to give him a blanket, which you'd call a blankie with a little one.
Blankie, or
comfort blanket or a comforter. But he refused to have that. And then I tried to give him like a monkey with a dummy on the end. Didn't want that. And any teddy you give him, he looks at it for a second and he absolutely launches it across the room. So he just throws it as far away as he can. He's like, no, I want mummy. So it's still a battle at the moment.
I like the way he looks at it for a few seconds. Like that's how long it takes for him to work out that this isn't you.
Yeah. Well, just you know, what is this thing that you've given me? How dare you? Look of disgust.
No, I want you. Mm-hmm. Hello. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And searching for the dummy in the middle of the night is quite something.
Yeah.
Because the child wakes up and you work out, what is it? What does they need? Oh, they've dropped the dummy.
Yeah.
And somehow those dummies become invisible when they fall on the floor.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do that. They'll fall and roll just behind the leg of the bed, where, you know, you can search for it for 20 minutes and still not find it. And, you know, that's
fine. You know, you can get glow-in-the-dark ones. That's what we discovered with our second child. Glow-in-the-dark dummies, absolute lifesaver for those middle-of-the-night scrambles to find the dummy. It's like, just look for the light, look for the light.
I think that's good. Dummy vision.
Yeah. Poof,
engaged.
Absolutely.
Dinner?
I was going to say, I was going to help you segue. If the dummy falls on the floor, I'd say to my child, I go to put it back in his mouth, say, no, icky. That's icky. It's been on the floor. It's dusty. Yuck. Or yucky.
Icky. Icky or yucky, meaning sort of dirty and disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. What about dinner?
Dindins.
What do we call dindins? Yeah.
Time for dindins. Come and sit down for your dindins.
What about when a child falls over? They don't hurt themselves, they don't cry, but they fall over. Yeah. What do we say?
Oopsie-daisy. Oh dear. Oopsie-daisy. Such a funny phrase, isn't it?
Oopsie-daisy, yeah.
Yeah. I've got a funny story with that, actually. Yeah. Jacob must Jacob must have been two. So I'd been a parent for 2 years and Caspian had just been born. I was walking him along the path and I saw a grown man across the street slip and fall onto his bum. And I shouted, "Whoops-a-daisy!" to this complete stranger who is a grown man, and then felt completely embarrassed that I just shouted a really babyish term to some strange guy.
Oh my God. Yeah, because when you're in the house with the kids all the time, you just that just becomes the normal mode, yeah. Doesn't it? And then you go outside into the real world and you see a grown man fall over. Whoopsie daisy. Yeah. Oh God.
Did you get a boo-boo?
A boo-boo, meaning boo-boo. Like a little bruise
ouchie. Oh, we say ouchie, actually, for if you've hurt yourself. Oh, have you got an ouchie? So if my son has a bruise or a scratch, or if he's got a toothache, anything that's pain-related, I'd say, do you have an ouchie? An ouchie. Because I think boo-boo, although I hear it more in this country, but I feel like that's more American in general. And then I feel like it's become more popular over here because of, you know, some kids' content on YouTube can be huge. These songs and kids' videos can have millions and millions of views. And there's a very popular song about having a boo-boo to get a boo-boo. Oh, yeah. And so I feel like that's become more popular over here. But I might be wrong. I'm not sure of the origin of boo-boo.
No, you're probably right. I'd say you're probably right. In France, so obviously I'm bringing up my daughter in France to be bilingual and stuff, but we speak English in the home. But nevertheless, like a lot of the standard French words for things do come in. And so they've got big things, big words in France that everyone always uses with their kids. So there's dodo, which is nap time.
Okay.
Sleepy time. And there's bobo, that is an ouchie.
Oh, right. Okay.
Oh, did you get a bobo? And so, you know, I end up saying, oh, you had a bobo. It's all right. It's time for dodo, you know. And what are some of the other ones? Goûter.
What's a goûter?
Sounds very sophisticated.
A goûter. When you write it's like something you'd wear. I'm wearing goûter today.
Un goûter. Un bon goûter. That's snack time.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, which is an institution here. It happens at 4 o'clock. At 4 o'clock.
Wow.
Central European time, all French children are stuffing some kind of cake or biscuit into their mouths.
It's quite late for snack time, isn't it?
Yes, you know, it's the continent, isn't it? They do everything
relaxed,
late.
Relaxed, yeah, because we're having dinner at 4:30.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Dinner?
Yeah. Dindins.
Really? Not
We have dindins
tea.
At 4:30. You know, well, so, see, that's strange that you say that, because surely Northern is breakfast, dinner is the lunch, and then tea. Mm. Tea time is the late meal in the day. So breakfast, dinner and tea. That's me as a northerner. I say, yeah, breakfast, dinner and tea.
Yeah.
But down here in the south, it's breakfast, lunch and dinner.
Yeah, when I was growing up, I mean, it's again because my parents are originally from Yorkshire and have lived in the Midlands and lived in London. So we're from all over the place, really. Mm-hmm. So maybe a lot of stuff came in from their parents. So we always call dinner tea.
Right.
But lunch would be lunch.
Right. So you didn't have any dinner?
But then there is a thing called dinner, which we now, as we're all adults, you know, more or less, we have dinner.
Oh, like a posh dinner. Dinner is posh.
Dinner sounds more posh, do you think?
Well, if your vocabulary is breakfast, lunch and tea, but dinner is only when you're out with friends and having an organised meal, then...
Yeah, you wouldn't go out to a restaurant to have tea, you know? And by the way, anyone wondering, tea doesn't mean a cup of tea. You're not like giving your child a cup of... There you go. There's your cup of tea. Do you want some sugar? No. Tea means a meal. It's food, of course, but we just call it tea. It's not afternoon tea.
Yeah.
It's not Downton Abbey, you know, a nice tea set.
Cup and saucer.
Yeah, cups and saucers. No, that's afternoon tea. Which not many people do. Anyway, so tea meaning dinner. Yeah, so we would have our tea at like, I don't know, what, 5:30 or 6 o'clock or something. And, you know, my mum would cook it up and then we'd probably watch a bit of telly and then get in our pyjamas, our gym jams, and then off to bed.
Beddy Bows.
Beddy by Bows time.
Beddy by Bows.
but dinner is, yeah, I suppose it's sort of like a bit slightly later sort of thing the adults would have. Yes. But yeah, interesting that in different parts of the country, in England, in the north, it's breakfast, dinner and tea.
Yeah.
And in the south, breakfast, lunch and dinner.
Yeah. Yeah. But you still have, at school, you still have dinner ladies, which I always argue. So if you don't have dinner in the middle of the day, then why do we have dinner ladies at school serving dinner, serving lunch? So it's...
Nothing makes sense. It doesn't add up.
English.
Imagine what it's like if you come to England from another place and it's like, wait a minute, so it's you call it lunch, but these women who are serving me lunch, they're called dinner ladies.
Yeah.
What do they do at dinner time? Do they serve lunch? What's going on in this country?
At dinner time, then they're tea ladies. Maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to end this with a little quiz, sort of a quiz thing. This is where I will describe a thing. So this is common words and phrases related to babies, children and childcare. Okay. We just had like little sort of babyish sounding words like baby talk, parent ease kind of stuff. But now some words like things that we deal with, things that we have to buy and use when our kids are growing from babies into children, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to define it. You have to try and tell me what it is. Listeners, have you got any idea what the words could be? So the first thing, and this is in no particular order, let's say. Okay, so the first thing is, so you've got a baby and sometimes you'll put the baby, let the baby lie down on the floor on a mat or something, and they stare up and above them you put a thing, and from this thing little toys are hanging down on bits of string, and the baby sort of reaches up to play with these things and play with these toys, and it helps with their motor skills and stuff. What would you call one of those things? Any idea?
A mobile.
Oh, a mobile. Oh, you call it a mobile.
Do you call it something different?
Well, I was thinking, so a mobile, yeah, that's, for me, that's a thing you hang from the ceiling and it hangs down, and kids like to look up at mobiles, helps to develop their eyesight and stuff.
But I was thinking, and they turn and they make music and things.
Yeah, they can turn and make music. Yeah, so that's a mobile. It's more of a decoration. But these are the, I'm talking about something that kids actually grab, and they try and grab them and hit them and pull them and stuff.
As you said, they were laid down on a mat on the floor. Not, yeah. I'm thinking a mobile is usually in a cot, isn't it? Above a cot.
Hanging above a cot.
To try and get them to sleep and relax in their cot. Okay, right. So I know what you're thinking about now. I'm not quite sure if I know the name of it. Is it called like a PlayStation? not like a computer game.
I love that idea. Yeah, just give them a PlayStation. There you go, PlayStation 4. Grand Theft Auto 5. Go for it. An arch, like an activity arch or a baby arch or an arch toy. So an arch, just a thing that kind of goes over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, this is interesting. And this is coming back to the very beginning where you were talking to me about the name of my brand, English Like a Native. As a native, I know what these things are. I've used them, but I wouldn't have known the name for it. So if you said to me, Anna, do you have a baby arch? I'd be like, what's that?
You are.
What is it?
Yeah, yeah.
And you'd have to explain it.
When I was making this list, I was sitting next to my wife going, I just need words for this quiz, right? So sort of stuff we use with kids. And I said, what do we call that thing, you know, where you put the baby on the floor and you put the thing down and it sort of goes over the baby and then there are things hanging down. What do we call that? And she was like, I don't know. And so I Googled it and looked on various sort of websites and they're all like, you know, buy this new baby arch. I was like, I must call it a baby arch then. But it seems that no one really... seems to know what that is anyway. So a baby arch, but arch is quite a useful word, isn't it? I suppose.
Yeah, you can stand in the archway, you can have an arch in your garden where you grow climbing plants that grow
roses.
The arch. Yeah,
roses might grow over an arch if you have an arch over the doorway or something like that. And also you arch your back as well if you're doing certain yoga moves, you might have to arch your back.
Yeah.
All right, what about this thing, Anna? This is like a little deck chair that you would put the baby in, and the baby sits in the deck chair. You can kind of strap them in and they can sit there and they can kind of go boing, boing, boing.
That's a bouncer.
Yes.
Yes.
a baby bouncer. Now, that's not the other thing. There's another thing that that kids can also bounce in.
Yeah.
And this is where you kind of, they sit in it like it's almost like a harness and their legs are down. They're upright. Mm-hmm. Their legs are down at the floor as if they're standing up, and there's an arch over the top, and sometimes it has wheels so they can move around, but then they are suspended in the middle on elastic sort of things, and they can jump up and down, boing, boing, boing.
So we, you say an arch over the top. That confused me. They're normally doorway bouncers.
Oh, in the doorway, you can fit them to the doorway.
Yeah, you suspend your child from long elastic from the top of your door frame. And if you've got, you know, cruel siblings, then they might pull the child, which is what I did for my little brother when I was little. He had one of these doorway bouncers, and I got hold of him by the waist when no one was looking. I was a terrible big sister. I got hold of him by the waist and I pulled him back as far as I could and then let him go and just watch him just boing around. Mum wasn't happy about that one.
I think we call it a jumper, don't we? I'm trying to find the word in my list. I wrote it in the list. Where did I blooming put it? Baby jumper.
A baby jumper.
But a jumper is also a thing that you wear, like a sweater.
A pullover in America.
A pullover. Sweater.
No, it's a cardigan, but thanks for noticing. Do you know that quote?
No.
That's from Dumb and Dumber.
Airplane?
No, Dumb and Dumber, when they're driving along and the police car's like, pull over. He said, no, it's a cardigan, but thanks for noticing.
Right, wonderful.
Yeah.
Meaning pull over the car.
Yes.
But he thinks the policeman's just going, is that a pullover? No, it's a jumper, but thanks for noticing.
Yeah, so in the UK, we obviously don't use the word pullover, we use jumper. But, of course, you've got multiple versions of jumper. It could be a baby jumper.
Yeah. So in this case, baby jumper, that thing that I've heard that they're not actually very good for.
Well, they're supposed to be
kids.
A bit dangerous, actually, especially if you've got sadistic older sisters.
And also they may interfere with the development. You know, that babies are not supposed to be upright in that position at that age. They're supposed to be lying down. And that's the best way for their legs to grow and everything to develop properly, rather than having them suspended in a thing in the doorway.
Like, what?
Yeah. Although, you know, maybe historians will discover that for hundreds and thousands of years, humans have been suspending their children from elasticated things.
Yeah,
you know, there's like evidence of Bronze Age Britain when children were suspended from treetops. I don't think so, though. If you want to go out and you want to take the baby with you, you don't want to just leave it at home.
Mm.
You want to go out. What's a thing that you can use to carry the baby, attach it to your body, essentially?
A carrier? A baby carrier?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, is that right? It feels a bit wrong now I'm saying it out loud.
No, you're right. A baby carrier, and that will have like straps that you can tighten, a bit like a kind of a backpack situation, but it goes on the front and there's a baby in it.
Yeah.
So that's a baby carrier. But also there's the other version, which is kind of like
a wrap, isn't it?
A wrap just made of fabric, and you kind of wrap it around and the baby kind of slips inside there.
Yeah.
Which is, and
when you do it badly and they just get lower and lower and lower.
And then if you've done it wrong, slip. Oh, my God, the baby slipped out.
Yeah.
That's called a sling.
Oh, yes, of course. That's what I was thinking of, a sling, yeah.
A sling. All right, next word. What is the thing when the baby's learning to walk? Sometimes you'll kind of build a sort of, not a prison, for your child.
Oh, I see, yeah.
But it's a thing to keep the kid in one particular part of the room so they don't crawl off and hurt themselves.
Yeah. A pen, a play pen, or just a pen?
Yes, play pen, yes. Play pen. Also, a fence.
Yeah.
Which can be attached in the doorway, you know, and it's locked and the kid can't open
it
unless...
a baby gate.
A baby gate.
Yes, we have a baby gate at the top and at the bottom of our stairs. And luckily, my boys have shown no interest in climbing up on them. But I did see a YouTube video of a walking child in a nappy. So he must have been about one or just over one. There was a doorway with two baby gates, one on top of the other. So the baby gates was almost completely up to the top of the door frame, but there was a gap at the top. So two baby gates, one on top of the other. It must have been about 5 feet high, I would guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not very good with my measurements.
But sounds right.
Not quite as tall as me, but quite tall. And this child climbed up. I mean, they have such amazing skills if you give them a chance. Climbed up, both of them, managed to commando roll over the top and then slide down the other side. And when my partner showed me this video, it scared the life out of me because I thought, well, if we've got a stair gate at the top of our stairs and they try to climb over that, then, you know, they're going to fall down the stairs. But luckily, they never even try to go over or open the baby gate. So, phew.
Yeah. And that child grew up to become Tom Cruise.
Or some sort of free climber or something crazy.
Or a free climber of some kind. Yeah, exactly. All right. Okay, I need to hurry up a bit. I don't want this to become too long, which is what I say in every single episode of this podcast. Okay, what's a device that you can use to essentially spy on your child? I say that jokingly. Let's say your child is sleeping upstairs and you put something which allows you to hear them. It's a little microphone and speaker set.
Mm-hmm. It's a monitor. A monitor.
Correct.
Yeah, ours has got a camera on it, so you can actually spy on them. And because it's got nighttime vision, when they open their eyes, the light reflects off their pupils. So they have these kind of glowing eyes. And so sometimes you're just like, oh, the baby's very quiet. And you look at the monitor and the baby might be right in front of the camera because they've stood up in the night and be staring into the monitor. That's pretty freaky.
But, with these glowing eyes. Yeah. It's like, let's just check up on the baby. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Or if, because
aliens.
I have it on all night and because I'm a very anxious mother at nighttime. And in the night as I wake, I always have a look at the monitor to see if they're okay, if they're covered up and things. And on occasion they have in the night, I wake up, I'm a bit snoozy and I look at the monitor and they're just there staring at the camera. You know, like Poltergeist or some scary film comes to mind.
That's good. Okay. Okay. When a baby or child is eating, you put something around their neck so that they don't spill the food everywhere.
Yeah, a bib.
A bib. That's right.
Yeah.
What does a baby or young child sleep in?
Mummy's bed. No, a cot. A cot you would normally put them in, or a crib, I think, but that's more American, is it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
A cot. Yeah.
And when they're very young, it's a Moses basket, isn't it?
Yeah, a little basket, and you can pick it up like that.
Yeah, very sweet. Although in some cultures, and it's becoming a little bit more popular over here, they have a drawer. I think it's like a Swedish or some sort of Nordic thing. You are given a drawer, and in the drawer there are lots of things for baby when it's your first child. But then the drawer doubles up as a cot, and you sleep your child in it. I'm sure someone listening will know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you just put your child in the drawer. Okay, good night then. And just close the chest of drawers. Where's the baby? Oh, in the chest of drawers. Yeah. What? Yeah, it's a Swedish thing. Oh, well, that must be fine then. If it's good enough for the Swedish and Norwegians and the Danish, then it must be fine.
Yeah, but normally it would be a cot. Although we never used one. We did a floor bed, Montessori style.
Oh.
Which is supposed to, what's the word, encourage independence in the child.
Is that what you want, though? Do you want a child independently just crawling around while you're asleep?
Well, so what we did was we took the door off the bedroom. So there was no door on the bedroom, but we put a baby gate up so that they could always see out and we could always see in. And we put a curtain up so it wasn't drafty or too bright. And then we built them like a little house bed kind of thing, but it was on the floor. So it was a bed, but it was kind of in like covered with a, you know, a roof and walls with little windows in, and then one side completely open. And the idea is you put them with some books and you put a drink, and so they don't have to cry out for you anytime they need something. In some cases they put a potty in there as well if they're potty trained, so they can just get up, get themselves a drink, read a book if they want, because the idea with Montessori is they are just young people And if you are put into bed and told you must lie down and you must go to sleep, but you're just not tired, and actually what would help you is to look at a book for a few minutes or have a quick drink, then they're independent if they can get up and do it themselves. They don't need to call out for you for every little thing. So that was the idea. It didn't always really work like that.
Saying that's amazing. I'm imagining you going in the morning, and let's check on the baby, and you go in and he's just set up his own podcast in there. So, oh, well, this whole independent bed thing is really working out. Okay, what basics? What do children wear so that when they do pee pee or poo poo, it doesn't go everywhere? You have to change them regularly.
A nappy.
A nappy.
Yeah. We use. You've got a little girl, haven't you? But we, with our boys, we found the pull ups. As soon as we could get them in pull up nappies, were much better, much easier.
They come into the pull up varieties where it's an elasticated waistband that just pull up and pull on, or you've got the ones where they. They have like tabs that you can attach and all that stuff.
They're very, it's a lot of faff, isn't it? I love that word.
Faffing around of like, fold this part of the nappy down, pull that bit over, stick that to there, stick that, Yeah, a lot of faffing around. Whereas the elasticated ones, it's just like, okay, up, down, that's it.
Yeah, and teaches them about how to pull up their own pants and things as well once they're in pants. It's quite useful.
Yes.
My little one, my 2-year-old is now saying, no, I do it. And so when I'm trying to change his nappy, he's like, get off, I do it. I'm doing it all wrong. So it's all folded over and.
You're like, I should let him do it. But also I don't want any poo anywhere else except in this nappy. So I think I'm going to do it this time.
Mummy help you.
Yeah. Okay. Last one. When we go out, you said that you've sort of stopped using this recently.
Oh, yes.
When you go out with the child and you know, they may be too young to walk and maybe they want to sleep or something like that, you have to push them around in something. Yeah. What is it?
Oh, so this is interesting. So I always say pram, but there are many ways of describing this and I'm not quite sure always of the difference. You've got a pram or a buggy. Talk about a buggy, a stroller. And I think there's another way of describing it. What do you call it?
So pram, pushchair.
Pushchair, that's the one.
Buggy, stroller. I'm not sure exactly of the origin of all of these, but certainly the word pram is one of those old-fashioned
lie flat kind of ones, is it?
Large Mary Poppins kind of things.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a pram
in a Mary Poppins. I don't know if there is one in... Why did I think of that?
You're thinking about the old-fashioned nannies that did always have these... And they have a name, these beautiful old prams where they had like curling or like an arched handlebar and a big, huge big wheels and the actual... The holding part is quite curved, isn't it?
Yes.
It has a special name. Yeah.
Spacious, probably quite comfortable, great suspension. You imagine that they've got really good suspension in them so that any bumps in the road will, you know, not wake
the baby.
Exactly. So that's a pram.
Yeah.
But obviously these days we don't have that exactly. And what we've got, you know, with modern innovations and stuff, those things have changed. But the basics would be the pram is that where the baby lies flat, and a push chair is essentially a chair with some wheels on it and you kind of, they sit in it strapped in and you push them around. So those in British English, I think those are the two main ones. And then probably a lot of the innovations that have happened have been done internationally or at least have come from the States. So the words like a buggy and a stroller, these words are probably originally from America, but we use them too.
Yeah, because stroller sounds American, doesn't it? Stroller. Let's take a stroll.
A stroller. Like, you know, oh, I think we're going to get a new stroller.
Yeah. It has an American feel to it. I don't ever say stroller myself.
No, neither do I.
We do say buggy because I think our actual model is called like the sports buggy. I think we've got a Phil and Ted's sports buggy.
Sports? What sports are you doing with that? Racing?
Yeah, well, it's made for running. It's got great suspension. It's a three-wheeled contraption, or it's not a contraption, a device, a vehicle, whatever we'd call it. But it's got three wheels rather than four, and it's supposed to make turning very quick and responsive, which is great if you've just had a C-section, but it's meant to be good for running. And it had, our old model of it had a handle brake release. So you could, if you squeeze it, it would go. But as soon as you release the handle, the brake would go on. So if you were like running along and you tripped, for example, the buggy wouldn't keep going without you because you'd let go and the brake would automatically go on. And there was also a safety strap you could put around your wrist. And that has, that's great because it has, it also lies flat and sits them up. So if they want to have a snooze while you're taking them out for a run, then you can. And they're quite good for going off-road. So if we're ever doing like a an off-roading stroll. No, but if we're going out in the country, it's a bit muddy. We have also the, there's one you can get that folds and is small enough to take on a plane.
Yeah, that's the yo-yo.
The yo-yo. So we have one of those. We had all these ideas of being inspiring parents who would travel with our kids. And then, you know, we had lockdown with the first one. And then with the second one, we're just like, there's no way we're traveling with two kids. It's too expensive. It's too much hassle. We'll just stay in England for a while. So, but we have this yo-yo and we use that because it's quick and easy around town. But if we're ever going to like the park or like in the countryside somewhere, then the sports buggy is the best option because the wheels are big.
You know. Yeah. I mean, living in Paris and having kids in Paris, the idea of having a sports buggy is just like hilarious. The idea that you could basically, the yo-yo is definitely the most popular pram.
Yeah.
I see there, I'm calling it a pram, pushchair pram. Yeah. That's what we call it.
Yeah.
In with my wife and I, we do still call them prams. Mm-hmm. That's the yo-yo is definitely the most popular one here because, as you say, it's so small. And a lot of the streets here are very small and very crowded.
And do you feel like a superhero when you open it? Do you do the one-handed?
Yeah, it's kind of like a superpower where it's like, I will turn this small little thing in. Pow!
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you can go, or a magician. You kind of look a bit like a magician, like pow, and then.
Alakazam.
Yeah. Exactly.
Looks like a briefcase. Now it's a pram.
Pam, now it's a pram.
I always do it if I go out somewhere and I open up the boot of the car. I look around. There's some people. I'm like, oh, so it's just someone walking past. Kapow. And then they're like, double take. Like, hang on.
Wow.
What?
Amazing. Okay, I think that's probably the end of the quiz. And we should probably end it here. We could go on forever, but we won't. We're going to stop this episode now. But very nice to talk to you, Anna. And obviously the YouTube channel that you've got, English Like a Native, is doing really, really, really well.
Thank
but good luck with the podcast, which
you
finally
very much.
Started.
And you're going to come onto my podcast, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Yeah, that's what we're going to do next.
Yeah.
So, yeah, looking forward to that.
Fantastic. Well, we better go and get a brew before we do that and refresh our palates.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, thanks again. And I'll speak to you again in a couple of minutes.
Toodaloo.
Bye. So there you go. Thanks again to Anna from English Like a Native. Very nice to talk to her. You can find a vocabulary list and notes on the page for this episode on my website if you want to check specific words, because there were quite a lot of specific words and things that came up in this conversation, weren't there? Yes, there were. So if you were thinking, what was that? How do you spell that? I'd like to remember those things. Well, go to the page for this episode on my website, go to the episode page, and there you'll see a list of all that stuff. Okay, if you're listening to this on a podcast app, which you probably are, then look in the episode notes, the show notes. You'll find the link to the episode page there. Okay. A reminder, just something to remind you. After recording this conversation that you just heard with Anna, Anna then interviewed me on her podcast. And as I said earlier, we had a good long conversation about lots of things, with little stories and jokes and stuff. A good long conversation. Anna interviewed me. And it's always nice to be interviewed. It's quite flattering and it's kind of a treat to be interviewed when someone thinks that you are worthy of being interviewed and they ask you questions that they've thought about in advance. It's quite a treat. So anyway, you can listen to that conversation. I think it was even longer than the one you just listened to. And I'm wondering how Anna is going to deal with that, but you can find out for yourself by listening to that episode on Anna's podcast, which is called English Like a Native, which is available wherever you get your podcasts. And the episode with me should be available now. And as you will discover, there are lots of other episodes there too. So there we go. All right, listeners. Yes, a new member of the Thompson family arriving in July. Is anybody ready for this? Well, we're just going to do our best, but we're looking forward to it. And so, as I said before, I'm sure I'll talk about it a bit more. I don't want to go on and on and on about that. But obviously, as you can imagine, it's kind of a big deal for us. So I'll talk about it a little bit more in another episode, I expect, and so on. Okay, but there you go. All right. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Luke's English Podcast. Thank you for your comments. Thank you for your subscription. Thank you for your support. If you are a premium subscriber, I hope you've been enjoying the recent premium episodes which I've uploaded, including P44 and P45 story time episodes with stories about me getting into trouble or maybe avoiding getting into trouble as a child. I've got lots of other stories like that, which are going to be coming up on Luke's English Podcast Premium. Lots of tales, stories and anecdotes from my life, which I've transformed into episodes of the Premium podcast. And that includes the stuff like the vocabulary practice, the verb forms, prepositions and pronunciation practice as well. So that's all coming in upcoming episodes of Luke's English Podcast Premium, coming soon to a podcast subscription near you. If you'd like to sign up to LEP Premium and like basically update your podcast feed in your podcast app of choice on your phone with all the premium episodes, then just go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium. to get started, okay? And if you are already a premium subscriber and you don't know how it works, just send me an email or go to my website. There's lots of information there, okay? You should be getting add all the episodes to an app on your phone, okay? That's the right way to do it. That's the smart way to do it. Okay, then. But thank you so much for your support. LEP Premium is what allows me to continue doing this podcast without having a boss breathing down my neck. Without having a boss chasing me up, without having a boss coming to my desk and saying, Luke, can I just have a bit of a word with you? No thanks. I don't have that. Thanks to Luke's English Podcast Premium. I get to do this my own way. And that's thanks to the support that I get from the premium subscription. Okay, keep the dream alive. Subscribe to Luke's English Podcast Premium. Okay, thanks everyone. Be nice to each other. Okay, and I will speak to you again soon. But for now, it's just time to say goodbye. Bye. 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 Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.